epic views, waterfall mists, summit sunsets. It's all better outside. And with All Trails, you can discover the best of nature with over 450,000 trails around the world. Download the free app today and find your next adventure.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 50% off with minimum purchase, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Fun fact, you can't get pregnant every day. You're only fertile for 6 days, ovulation day and the 5 days leading up to it. Natural Cycles is the only birth control app that can pinpoint your fertile window by analyzing your hormone-driven temperature trends. It's more than just a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Good afternoon, everyone. I want to welcome you to Mount Olive Missionary Baptist Church. I want to thank Pastor Gillison for hosting us today. So welcome you. A few housekeeping things. I'll say with most meetings, you know, it's open. If you need to use the restroom or whatever, you can do so. There are restrooms over here to my left. And also this door to my right that goes into a corridor. You go out there and you turn to your right. There's also restrooms for both men and for women. So welcome. Thank you all for taking time out of your schedules to be here with us. It's been a long time since we had an opportunity to talk openly about restoration of Humboldt Parkway. And I just want to share, as far as Rock, we got started more than 20 years ago on this endeavor to put the park back in Humboldt Parkway. We've always had the mindset of a tunnel, a promenade, or a decking in order to reconnect our community and also to just make sure that modes of traffic, whether it be cars, bicyclists, motorcycles, pedestrians, can all have a viable and a walkable community. We've been advocating. The DOT has done many public meetings, and we've had many public comment periods. I also want to just note that a fill-in has always been one of those options in dealing with a tunnel and a capping, and it has not gotten the traction, and it's not something that is viable for our city. It is not beneficial for safety. It's not beneficial as far as response, emergency responses, and that is why we continue to move forward. And we are happy that there was a decision for an environmental impact statement to be done to make sure we deal with mitigating any harm that could be brought to our residents. I also wanted to share this picture to help communicate some things. Buffalo is truly one of the best planned cities. Frederick Law Olmsted put a city in a park. And there are various parks throughout the city of Buffalo. The park and Parade Park, as they were originally known, which are now Delaware and MLK Park, are the crown gems, with Humboldt Parkway being the main parkway that connected those two parks. It is our mission and our vision to reconnect those two parkway systems as we bring about economic stimulus, health quality, housing, restoration, infill to that. So I just wanted to share that you can see on this map, which has the artery of the park system, and MLK Park and Delaware Park being that. And that has always been Rock's mission. And I think that as you begin on an endeavor, you can't really continue to keep the whole vision in the forefront of the community. Rock started with a tunnel because reconnecting our community allowed for us to bring economic and capital investment to the east side that has been lacking capital improvements for more than 50 years. So this is just a starting point. We are building a bridge to better, and we hope that you will join us and rock with us in restoring our community, bringing restoration to a community that has been marginalized and disenfranchised for decades, and we're still experiencing that. When you think about COVID, the pandemic, and other things that have happened, the East Side already knew that we were disadvantaged, and the pandemic just helped elevate things that we as a Black community knew we were dealing with all along. So that's a little background in history that I welcome you all, and look forward to a healthy discussion and us moving this project forward to be beneficial to our community members. Thank you.
Thank you, Sydney. Let's give Sydney a round of applause. So the last time we met as a group, we discussed the judge's ruling. And so what we wanted to do is make sure that we as a community had a clear understanding of what the judge's ruling was, specifically related to EIS, and what exactly that means, and make sure that that's crystal clear so we can, you know, be clear about where we are in the process. We are really privileged today in that we have somebody who is eminently qualified to talk to us about that, Ms. Lanessa Chapman from the New York Civil Liberties Union, and she will talk to us in detail about what took place in the judge's ruling and what the EIS means. Give a hand for Ms. Lanessa Chapman.
So thank you for having me today. Lanessa Owens Chapman, I'm the director of the Racial Justice Center for the New York Civil Liberties Union. I am a Syracuse native. And so I worked really hard on the I-81 project, if you're familiar with that. We also joined the litigation challenging the DOT's failure to do an EIS. We had major concerns around how they had evaluated and assessed the project, and we thought that the project was important enough and big enough that they should have done a full environmental impact statement. The judge agreed with us and ruled in our favor and said that the DOT must do an EIS. So part of my role here is to talk about what that would look like. And I don't know if Emmanuel, if you want to help frame the issue or.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. We'll start by just like what NYCLU's role is and what we kind of hope to see the DOT do.
Yeah, I'm Emmanuel Rafford. I am the organizer with NYCLU in Buffalo. I'm a Buffalo resident. So when NYCLU first received the intake around the 33 project, the first thing that flagged concerns was for us was that in this project, all that NYSDA had did was an EA, right? And we thought with a project of this size that it was incumbent upon the NYSDA to do an EIS. So the first thing we did was we organized, we got some residents together, and we filed litigation on behalf of two residents saying that we believe that NYSDA should have done an EIS in order to make sure that when the project happened, everybody in that community had all the safety and things they needed to make sure that they were safe during construction. So from the intimacy of the movement, what we did, NYCLU came in just to see and to make sure that everybody during the project was safe. When we came in, we were clear that we were not taking sides on whether it should or should not happen, whether it should be restored or capped or filled. That was not NYCLU's position. And still to this day, NYCLU is holding on to all we think should be happening at this moment in this present time is an EIS. And so what we're here to discuss is that what we believe is the best thing for the community to be doing right now is not arguing about one way or the other, but rallying around the fact that an EIS is about to take place. And during this EIS process, it is very important that the community use their voice to make sure that they are heard, because this EIS is gonna be very important for the project moving forward. So Lanessa is gonna be very gracious in talking about what an EIS is, what those things look like. But I just wanted to kind of frame what NYCLU's role is. We're here to make sure that during this EIS process, the community is heard, everybody. Not just one group, not one side, but everybody is heard. And so Lanessa's gonna kind of lay out what that looks like.
Yeah, thank you, Emmanuel. Emmanuel's also, we've held a few community meetings during the process too, and we've talked directly to people who live in the impacted area about the project. So what's the primary role of the EIS and why EIS matters so much in this project is because we know the harm that it created. We don't have to repeat that. We know the harm is both economic, social, and it persists today. And so the EIS is really a tool to acknowledge that harm and repair that harm and prevent future harm. So that's kind of what the legal standard is, and that's kind of how we were arguing our case in court. We were saying that this EIS needs to be done because of how much it's harmed the community in the past and the potential that it has to harm the community in the future and the current community's harm right now. One of our major concerns around the project as it stood last year was that this community, the folks that live adjacent to the Kensington Expressway, had some of the highest rates of asthma in your county, and some of the highest rates of respiratory disease. And parts of that project would increase the air pollution by 6%. And so that was our major concern. What we were concerned about is we didn't feel the DOT had done enough to mitigate that harm. And so we were advocating for them to think through mitigation measures. And the only way they could do that is if they performed another EIS, or if they performed an EIS from the start. Next slide. Did you skip the slide? So what will the EIS cover? Here are all the things. I don't have to kind of go down the line of, you know, what it will cover. We all can read. But those are the things that it's going to cover. But what I want to focus on is the environmental justice piece. So how do we embed environmental justice, racial equity throughout the entire planning and decision making? And so that means we center the historically harmed communities at every phase of the project, from the scoping, which is, should have happened a few years ago, but like we're here now. So from the scoping process to the design to the construction to long-term impacts. And I think that piece is important when we're centering the folks that live in the community. So I understand there's a large community here and a lot of folks have concerns. And what we saw on the I-81 project is something very similar, where Syracuse had a raised viaduct in the middle of a black community that was really the cornerstone of how people got from A to B throughout the county. And so we heard a lot of complaints from people who lived in the suburbs or maybe the outskirts of the city of Syracuse about commute times and travel times, and it was going to take them longer to get to work, or they wouldn't be able to access certain things. We continue to kind of harp the most important voices are the folks who live in the footprint, the people who are in the impacted area. What do they want their neighborhood to look like? This is an opportunity for those folks to make sure that they're being heard, and they're often the ones that are hardest to reach. We did canvassing in those neighborhoods, and we found that many folks still had not heard about the project. It's not for lack of effort, it's just because those people historically are harder to reach. You can do everything. You can make flyers, you can create commercials, you can send out newsletters. Some folks are just really hard to reach. And so we wanna kind of encourage the New York State DOT and all the folks here to think through how can we make sure the voices of the impacted people who live in that area continue to be heard and have their voices uplifted. And then we want the EIS to commit to do no future harm, right? So no displacement, no new pollution. How are they gonna mitigate if this project moves forward? How are they gonna lessen that increase of 6% pollution and actually make the air better? Like, how do we improve that quality? That also means being very transparent and accountable and making sure they're investing in the community. And there's so many ways to do that. I know I have a short amount of time, so I'm not gonna get into it, but we'll continue to have this conversation. So how do we address past harms? First, we have to first understand them. And I think through the EIS process, there wasn't really an introductory paragraph or two that talked about those past harms. So we wanna see that in the future EIS, right? We wanna kind of make sure that the DOT is baking in those past harms, because that helps steer the direction of the EIS. That helps them continue to kind of center themselves on that past harm and honor the community. So if the community is saying whatever option they want, and so something that I wanna say is, when we were working on the I-81 project, there was conversations about turning it into a tunnel, and there were conversations about turning it into a skyline bridge. And there were also conversations about removing it altogether. It was not our job to tell them what was the healthiest, what was the best plan, what we thought was better. Even if we had the information and knowledge, it's our job to uplift their voices and talk about what they want to see in their community. And then the other point is, like, make sure they're restoring lost connections.
So again, no pollution should be worse in this community. We can get that through an EIS. We'll be able to look through all the assessments that are made in an EIS and compare that information and data. We actually hired an independent air quality expert to help us along the way. And so the NYCLU plans to be involved in every step of the way of the EIS process and working with all coalition partners in the New York State DOT just to make sure that we're all aligned here. The EIS must consider reasonable alternatives. That's not something we really saw in the environmental assessment because it's not really required. But the EIS requires this level of reasonable alternatives. The key takeaway, I'm not going to go over the list, but the key takeaway is that the alternative does not have to be perfect or preferred. It just needs to be realistic and responsive to the project goals. Again, that's why we're talking about, when we're thinking about baking in racial justice, when we're thinking about uplifting the harm, having that as a project goal is a major priority, because then we can circle back and say, well, what's the project goal? Is the project goal reconnecting the community, and does this option achieve that? Early outreach, so things like we're doing today, we want to have early outreach and often make sure that we're not just giving people the plan after it's already been created. We want people to be a part of that process. They're called stakeholders, and so if you know community organizations or members of the community that want to be a stakeholder, ask DOT to be a key stakeholder. And then there's many ways to participate. We want to make sure the DOT offers many, many ways to participate. They're required to do this under the EIS. They have to provide their materials in different languages if there's a majority language spoke somewhere within the footprint of the project. They're required to kind of make sure that they're reaching people. That can be publications, community meetings, having community center-led meetings, all types of requirements to public outreach and community engagement. And I think here's the phases of community engagement, and this is kind of preferred, and so we want to have these conversations with New York State DOT around while they're drafting the EIS, but we would also prefer them to submit or make public a preliminary draft EIS. That's not something that happened in this process, but something we were able to get in Syracuse, which means not quite the draft, so the clock isn't ticking and the pressure isn't there. It's a preliminary draft. And so it gives people a sense of what's in the project, how the project's going to move forward, so people can have their input put in before that clock starts ticking. Because once they put out a draft EIS, you know, the clock starts ticking, right? You got 30 days, you got 65 days to read thousands of documents and charts and graphs and hundreds of pieces of paper. And it becomes really overwhelming for community members who have jobs and other things to handle. And then the final EIS. And that's it for me. Any Q&A, any questions, I'm happy to answer when you have me. Otherwise, most folks here know how to reach me.
One question. You characterize this focused on the EIS and going forward, but it is the legal process also, right, that involves the federal process, which is the environmental assessment process, and all of the things that are required for that. And then there's the third track, which is I filed the first legal action as a resident of Humboldt Park. So there's at least three tracks that were addressed in Judge Koliakos's decision. Mine as a pro se resident of Humboldt Park, the federal NEPA process, and the state process, which he said the why he required the EIS was because he looked at the process that had occurred and he found it was irrational. He found that there was no credible evidence to support the decision, and he found that persons such as myself, residents, had bafflingly been disregarded in regard to the effects. Even with the EIS process proceeding forward, there will be a necessity to proceed with the federal process because they're the co-lead agency, right? FHWA. So could you address that three-prong?
Thank you, Terry. Yes, I will address. So I just want to provide some clarification. The EIS process, the Environmental Impact Statement, this is a process that the Federal Highway Administration, the New York State Department of Transportation, they work on that together. So when you're talking about NEPA, which is the National Environmental Protection Policy Act, right? EIS is in that. It's all one umbrella. So it's not a separate process.
But there was no EIS.
There was no EIS in any of the processes.
Right.
What the judge said was an environmental assessment, he didn't think that met the threshold of the project's requirements. And so there's actually three in New York State. There's three types of projects. There's a type one project, a non-type one project, and a type two project, right? And so if you are a type one project or a non-type one project, it's considered maybe not a major project. So maybe you don't need to do an environmental impact statement because you can show clearly there may not be any significant negative impacts as a result of the project, right? So that's number one. So let's say you want to build, I don't know, a four-bedroom apartment unit. Maybe you don't need to do an environmental impact statement because they can show and demonstrate it's not going to have a huge negative impact on the community, right? But if there is going to be a major impact or there's the potential, right, that's the language in the EIS, if there's potential for a major negative impact or what they call significant negative impact or significant impact, then you're required to do an EIS. That's under the federal and state level. They're not separate projects. They're not separate entities. They're not separate pathways. But what is required is the New York State DOT and the Federal Highway Administration work together on one single EIS. If you had to do two EISs, that wouldn't work. Right, because what the Federal Highway Administration does is they rely on the local transportation agencies who are in the best position to make the decisions around what the project will look like. Now, it has to be approved by the Federal Highway Administration. And that's what happened in this project. So when we filed against New York State DOT, we are filing against a federally approved process. DOT can't move forward without the feds approving their project. So the EA was signed off not only by the regional DOT, it was signed off by the state DOT, and it was signed off by the Federal Highway Administration. So we were up against the law in that litigation, right? And we heard the attorney say, the feds are okay with this, the state is okay with this, the region's okay with this, why are you guys not okay with this? Right, so we had to carry the burden of proof to say, we're not okay with this because we think this project, a project of this size, of this magnitude, considering the history of the project, in an environmental justice community that's costing $2.2 billion, we think that's a major project that requires a complete environmental impact statement, and the judge agreed. So he actually reversed all of those processes in just that one ruling. So there isn't three processes. I just want to be very clear. There's one, that's the EIS process. We already went through an environmental assessment process, and we all said in that litigation that that wasn't enough. They're not going to do that again. They're going to just do an EIS.
But there are additional requirements, such as the section 106, the cumulative. There's a 106 process in the state EIS process? I don't think so. Well, the EIS, the section 106 process, which is within NEPA, is one process. The cumulative effect analysis within the NEPA process is distinct and different from the state EIS process. Now, I agree that if they're all done right, they can coalesce, but there are requirements in the federal process that are not requirements within the state process, or am I wrong?
I think there's a miscommunication because what you're talking about is individual regulations and individual laws. Right, so when you're performing an EIS, when the state is performing an EIS, they have to comply with every environmental regulation that's on the books, right? Whether it's federal or state, if it applies to this project, they have to apply. They have to comply with that regulation. That's not a separate process, right? The EIS is the process, right? Within that process, there's a ton of laws that they have to abide by. There's permitting processes, there's cumulative impact processes, there's a ton of processes, but they're not separate on their own. They're all a part of the EIS. So when that EIS comes out, and I understand because we've only ever seen an environmental assessment, but the EIS is much more robust. And the EIS is gonna say, it's gonna spell out, we are in compliance with the cumulative impacts law, we are in compliance with any section that is relevant. They have to spell out how they're in compliance. So it is all a part of the EIS process, even to a certain degree when you're getting permits for construction. All of that is in the EIS process. It's gonna be under one umbrella, and they're gonna send that EIS to the Federal Highway Administration, Once they get it in their hands, they're going to review it, they're going to confirm, and they're going to either come back with changes or recommendations to the DOT, or they're going to rubber stamp it and approve it. We just don't know. We haven't gotten that far yet.
All right, thank you. So part of, obviously, what we wanted to do is make sure that we're giving out crystal clear information, because there's a lot of voices out here saying a lot of different things. So what we want to do is try to make sure everybody is clear on where we are at in each step of the process. A lot of people are jumping way ahead and talking about processes that we're just simply not at yet. Right now, where we are at in the process is the judges has halted an already approved project. So there is a project, and he's asked for an EIS. We collectively as a community agree that there should be an EIS, that there should be, we should be making sure everybody is safe without question. And so right now, that process is beginning. And so what we want to do is make sure that people know what that process is and how they get to participate in that process, which we got clarity on. The people that's driving that process is the New York State DOT. And so we have the New York State DOT here, represented by Rich Fontana. Let's give a big round of applause for Rich Fontana.
Hi, everybody. They serve a lot of meals in this room, but I'm not going to give you a big word salad tonight. I'm just going to keep it brief for you, because you've spent a lot of time and a lot of effort. I want to thank everybody for the time and effort you put into, you know, pushing what you feel is right for this project. It's important that everyone have a voice. I'm here tonight essentially to listen. Our process for community engagement is starting essentially now through summer, and we're going to be talking about, you know, how we engage the community, where we'll be, and then information will be forthcoming. I don't have any big announcements tonight because we're just starting that process. We're just starting to listen to the public, and I'm here tonight to listen. So that's why I'm here. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to ask. Don't get too technical, Terry, because I've seen your briefs for the court. They're very good. I couldn't write those briefs. But if you have a specific question, I'd be happy to answer them. And we are here to listen tonight, and then you'll be seeing more engagement in the future coming up through DOT as we go through this EIS process. Sir? EIS, and you said that you're asking the DOT to do a draft before before the final. And this is for Rich too, to take this back. What the community really needs to see is what the objectives and the scope and the objectives. Make sure it's right for the community. Whatever comes out in the EIS is going to end up being what we have today, right? So I'm asking Rich, please take that back. We really need to get a focus on the objectives and the scope of this project. Thank you. I think that's why you did not see a jump right into an EIS process. They wanted to talk to the community, get that scope and focused on properly. So I think that's why, if someone's thinking, well, what are they waiting for? Rather than to jump into something and then end with a process that puts us right back where we were, that's what we're trying to avoid. Thanks, Carl.
Hi, Rich. How's it going? So my name is Sean Sweeney. I'm a transportation engineer, and I've had this question been brewing for... The question as it relates to the goals of the project, right? One of them being maintain the traffic. So this is my question. I'm gonna ask it, then I have a quick statement, and then I'll ask a clarifying question. So the question for DOT is, in your evaluation of alternatives, particularly in the highway removal and tunnel options, was the regional travel demand model updated to reflect the widely observed phenomenon of reduced vehicular demand? Specifically, did the model account for any induced demand in reverse, also known as traffic evaporation, which has been documented in numerous highway removal projects across the U.S.? So, to clarify, like my statement, if the model assumes that all 75,000 vehicles per day must be rerouted without applying any reduction factor or accounting for mode shift, trip consolidation, or suppression, then the assumptions behind the model do not reflect real-world outcomes. In engineering, we call that garbage in, garbage out. So, can you clarify whether the model used for this project did or will be, if they're going to do another one, incorporate any demand sensitivity or elasticity analysis under a no highway scenario? And if not, why not?
Let's move forward with that question. I could get you an answer if you want for what the old one did, but the new one, that point should be brought up. I remember seeing the numbers and asked myself, are these conservative? Do these make sense? And from my justification of looking at the numbers, they seemed conservative and made sense. But if there's another dynamic that you're introducing or say that should have been looked at, that could be addressed.
Yeah, so the question arose because I was reviewing Stantec's traffic analysis memo for the Rochester project, and I understand this is not Rochester and the traffic volumes aren't the same. However, the phenomenon exists no matter what the volumes are. And they intentionally mention that while national trends indicate that traffic volumes have leveled off or even decreased over the past 10 years throughout the nation, traditional forecasting substantially overestimates the potential for traffic growth. And recent studies have revealed that traffic on roads in urban settings, arterial and collectors, which would be like Broadway, Williams, and those things like that, that it was just typically overestimated by a significant amount. So I guess my question is, will that be considered in a further analysis?
I think you'll see a robust look at that. You'll see a public look at that to make sure that makes sense. I know that we took the numbers for electric cars. We didn't increase them at all, so we weren't adjusting pollution numbers, kind of a 2019 numbers. So everything I looked at, I said, does this make sense to me as a homeowner that would live right there? And it did. But if there's a nuance that you're looking at for the new one, we'll talk about it.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Okay, this is working? Yeah. I'm Doug Funke, I'm the president of Citizens of Regional Transit. I guess along the lines, maybe the scoping process, I hope we'll, you know, have community input and we'll start from scratch to decide what's best. The question I have, I mean, as a transit advocate, we are also advocating for improving light rail, extending light rail, and I would like some analysis to look at some alternatives of public transportation and what the impact would be on traffic. And the other is Region Central. You know, Region Central is kind of been put aside as far as this whole project, and not considered, at least so far. You know, but Region Central is going to, if it's pursued the way the original plan had it laid out, would disconnect the 198 from the 33. That would reduce traffic by 20 or 30,000 cars a day. So I hope that these two projects can be combined. It doesn't seem to make sense to not combine them because they work together. And I hope that as moving forward, you'll look at them both and bring them into one big project. That's what we're looking for.
Again, I'm taking off my Fillmore Forward hat and I'm putting on my Citizens for Regional Transit hat. Regarding the transportation, I hope the DOT will consider, and actually the other thing too, and everybody should really get familiar with this, local transportation agencies here are rolling out a technology called MyoVision. And it's an intelligent system that can manage intersections. So when you say there's going to be 75,000 cars, yeah, it's 75,000 cars over a 24-hour period, right? The peak, and this is all in the DOT's environmental assessment. At peak, it's about 6,200 cars at rush hour that come into the city and leave the city. It's not 75,000, so that's one thing. But they need to consider what MyoVision is going to do for reduction of times, wait times at intersections, and it also gives the technology, also allows for emergency vehicles to pass through with a priority, right? You know, that was one of the arguments you kind of hear, that emergency vehicles won't be able to get through the city quick enough. Well, this technology is being rolled out, and if you take a look on the corner of Best Street, Genesee, and Walden, there is a, looks like a shepherd's crook. There's a camera there. That's the beginning of the rollout of this technology. It's called MyoVision, M-I-O Vision. Please take a look. Questions? Come on, people, we're here. Sydney and company has put together this wonderful wonderful space. Let's get some questions out.
All right, I got that. I'm going to manage the questions. Okay, so we also want to move our agenda. If there are no other questions for DOT, we will move on to our state. Oh, you have a question for DOT?
A DOT question.
Yeah, because that's the reason why I want to be clear.
It could be DOT. It's yeah. Now traffic.
Hold on a second. Because I want to be clear. What we want to do is make sure that we're moving forward on an agenda together. So we're not asking general questions right now. We're asking questions to Rich about DOT.
Yeah, this addresses what Carl mentioned and would address what I would hope the DOT would address. What Carl mentions about the intersections and emergency vehicles. Erie, Pennsylvania has had such a system in place since the 1950s. So you don't need modern technology to do it. We do need emergency vehicles to be able to get from point A to point B without interruption whenever possible. But the technology's been there for 60, 70 years. And I hope the DOT would look into that when they analyze that part of it.
What technology?
The technology that turns lights red at intersections so that emergency vehicles have the right of way and everybody else stops.
Is there a trigger somewhere, or like, is it?
I would hope that you'd be able to contact Erie, Pennsylvania people. They know about it. They've been doing it for 60 years.
Do you have any objections to any fences or any zoning issues today?
Not today. I'll leave that for tomorrow.
All right, let's give a big round of applause to Rich Fontana, DOT. Next thing we want to do is be crystal clear about what is going on as it relates to the funding of the project. There's been a lot of conversation about funding from one project can be used for another project, and that kind of conversation. So we just want to be crystal clear about the funding of the project, where it is and how it works, and whether you can transfer funding from one project to another. And so we have Mark Boyd from Assemblywoman Crystal People Stokes' office. Let's give a round of applause for Mark. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. I will try to keep this very short so we can continue to get through the program. As you all are aware, with the project being approved, the funding is there. Now, whether or not the project happens, and you know, we're at the point where we are just about completing our five-year capital program for DOT. So if, in the event that the project doesn't start before the new five-year plan is created, the funds will just roll over and project would happen once it's ready. So I hope that is simple and clear enough for people. So the funds are there, but they haven't quote unquote been encumbered specifically for this project in the sense that, you know, you can't claw it back or put it towards something else. There's a list of projects that are approved for funding, and as those projects happen, they're taken off the list, and whatever's remaining there The funds are there, and once it happens, it happens. So in the event that something else comes up and this project gets delayed for a number of years, DOT can likely take those funds and apply them towards another project. But at the same time, they also understand because this project has been approved, they're going to have to backfill that. So does that make sense to everyone? Question? I'll do my best to try to answer them, but I don't work for DOT, so.
My question was for the gentleman from the DOT prior to moving to the next speaker. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, anywho, my question is about the stakeholders, the homeowners, the people who live in the affected community, and the DOT's promise that we could be part of the conversations and have a seat at the table as stakeholders. Where do we sign up for that? And also, we don't have to be, just clarify, we don't have to be a part of a specific group of people or organization to have our voices heard as the homeowners and the tenants and residents that reside in the affected area on Humboldt Parkway. Is that correct?
That's correct. Even during our meetings that we held at the Science Museum, anytime someone came in, I was, come on in. I never shut the door. I never did that. Sometimes people said, well, they're not part of this group, not part of this group. I said, if they took the time to come to this meeting, they're coming into the meeting. And everyone could attest to that. Those meetings were open. As part of this new process, that process with the EIS will be much more robust. So those homeowners' voices will be amplified. And I think that's important. There's a office for the project that's on Humboldt. I, with the commissioner, we insisted that it be on Humboldt, be close to where residents could walk to, not put somewhere where it'd be forgotten type of deal. We're still in that office. So as we engage, we'll be engaging all those homeowners.
But can you clarify for me? I'm gonna go back as far as 2015. I actually went to a couple of the original meetings at the Science Museum. I stated at those meetings, I didn't miss a one, because I wanted to be a part of the table. I wanted a seat at the table. I also went to your office at the old Cedar Grove. I went there twice and requested for a seat at the table. All of the meetings, you had to be invited to go, and I never received my invitation. And I just felt that wasn't cool.
Well, that's bad information you received. I wish we would have talked, because many people that came weren't invited. They just came and come on in. Not a problem. So I think better communication there would have helped. And you should have been told, just come to the meeting, doors open. Look, Michael's shaking his head. He knows I never would hold a meeting that dealt with the public and keep the public out. That's not the way I operate.
Well, I would like, moving forward, I'm stating it now, I would like to be a part of that stakeholders process, as well as other members of our block clubs, our tenants, as well as the homeowners. The whole project, we're not against your project, we just don't want something happening affecting us, our lives, our livelihoods, our health, our families, our way of life, our peaceful enjoyment of our homes. We want to be involved in what's going on in our neighborhood, and when we're talking about the EIS and all those different components, we want to be a part of that, and I don't want to have to fight to get a seat at the table.
After we wrap up, I'll come over and get your information. I'll give you my information, and we'll connect. Thank you.
All right, so what we want to do...
Can I ask you a question?
You asking Mark Boyd a question?
Actually, all three. The 50 years ago, they put in this highway as a racial divide, and replacing redlining because that was going away. And there's been a lot of deleterious effects of that highway that has held the east side of Buffalo back for 50 years. And I'm wondering, the question is, in the environmental impact study, you talked about its effect on stakeholders. And it's the stakeholders are more than just the people that live on the Humboldt. They've borne the brunt of the health impact. But I would suggest that I would ask, is the impact study, are you going to look at the deleterious effects on the whole east side?
because Broadway was destroyed. Genesee was destroyed. All the major traffic routes were totally denuded of traffic when they put it on that highway. Is that going to be considered?
Out here, we feel things. The sore calves that lead to epic views, the cool waterfall mist during a hot hike, and the breeze that hits just right at the summit. But hey, don't just listen to us. Experience it for yourself. All Trails makes it easy to discover the best of the outdoors, with more than 450,000 trails around the world, points of interest along the trail, and offline maps for always-on navigation. Download the free app today and find your next outdoor adventure.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 50% off with minimum purchase, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's built around your body. The Natural Cycles app pinpoints your fertile days by tracking shifts in your temperature so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. It's easy to use. Simply take your temperature in the morning with our free Bluetooth thermometer included with our annual plan, or sync with your Oura Ring or Apple Watch. The app analyzes your data and tells you daily whether it's a fertile or non-fertile day. Natural Cycles is 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. But beyond effective birth control, the app helps you understand your body and cycle better than ever. And unlike some period tracking apps, Natural Cycles provides an advanced data protection program to keep your information private and secure. Ready to go hormone-free? Sign up for the Natural Cycles annual plan and get a free Bluetooth thermometer, plus 15% off your subscription with the code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com.
What does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
Something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself. Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can like express yourself
in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
In what fashion you're saying that those areas, if the road is removed, will it be looked at, or if the road remains, what's the scenario?
So the scenario is if you remove the Humboldt Expressway, the traffic then would go back on those arterial roads, and they would become viable businesses.
That would be looked at, yes, sir.
Thank you. Good evening. I just want to take this opportunity to thank Majority Leader Crystal Peoples Stokes for sending not just one, Mark Gore, but two representatives in Debbie. Thank you for coming. And I know that had it not been for her stewardship and making sure that Buffalo had a chance to reconnect Humboldt Parkway to Delaware Park, I don't think we'd be sitting here. So I just want to tell you thank you so much for your stewardship. Thank you on behalf of
Joe T.
That's been completed. Thank you,
Bob. Thanks, Freddie. So moving to the next item on our agenda, because we did go over a little bit on that part.
So what we'll do, so listen to what I'm saying. Let me finish my point. We want to make sure everybody that we have scheduled for a presentation gets to present. And then at the end, we'll have an extended Q&A for if people have questions, but we do want to make sure we get through our full agenda. Okay, hold on a second. All right. So we passed that part of our agenda now. So with that specific question for Mr. Boyd, you can do it at the point we get to the next Q&A. All right. So because we're not going to be here till 8:00. We leave it at 7:30. Everybody. All right. So the next item on our agenda is this is a significant project for the east side of Buffalo. It's over $1 billion being invested on the east side of Buffalo. And we want to make sure that we understand the significance of that project as well as the opportunities that it creates. And so because the EIS is going on, it also gives an opportunity for some other things to take place during that process. We want to make sure that we take full advantage of that time. So I'm going to turn it over to Sydney Brown, and she's going to talk about making the case for the importance of the significance of this project to Buffalo's east side.
Thank you, Sam. I took a moment to turn around our sign of building a bridge to better, and I also want to just address this sister community member who has property along Humboldt, to just say as a member of ROC and to give honor also to Lumen Ross, Clark Eaton, and Stephanie Barbara Jeter, who was our fierce and loving leader before she went on to glory. I just want to say, as an organization, the community is always at the center and heart of everything that we do. And I'll say, I hear Ms. Stephanie's voice now when we talk about excavation, or saying, there ain't gonna be no dynamite, right? We're not doing no dynamite again, right? And then also just sharing about, you know, assessing all the homeowners that are right along Humboldt and needing community members, and also employing community members that take a block. Did you go house by house that as, you know, construction is taking place, it's not this long process. If something does happen, that there's this long 2-year period of you bringing about a correction. That is still in the forefront. So we want those voices. That's why we also need more community members, because there are so many things that this project brings about for our community. And I also want to emphasize the just forethought of the Black Chamber of Commerce that was instrumental in creating ROC, Restore Our Community Coalition, when you think about the harm that has been done to the east side as a whole. And as we get a time to talk about Africatown, which deals with Main Street and William Street and Clinton and so forth, it's much bigger. Once again, the bridge, the promenade, which is the starting point to give credence to us as a community, because people don't believe the east side is worth $1 billion, but we're worth way more than that. And we've lost more than $1 billion the longer that we hold up progress. And we understand the need to look at, you know, bigger views, but if we broaden the scope too long, nothing will happen. And the 33 sand remaining as it is continues to harm our community members and our next generation. And that is not something that we're willing to set aside or say we're going to take another 20, 30 years to figure this out. We don't have that time. Tomorrow's not promised to any of us. I just want to reassure my sister here and other community members that may not be right along Humboldt, but along Winslow or Riley or Landon or, you know, Woodlawn, whatever the artery streets are, that your lives, your homes, your properties matter to us. Also, I'll say as far as a footprint, we are going from Best Street to East Delavan, but we're also looking at the commercial corridors as far as Jefferson and Fillmore. We've already been advocating, and many of you have heard about Eastside Avenue, which has brought economic stimulus to property owners along Jefferson and Fillmore. And I just want to make note for us and those who are urban planners, what makes commercial district viable is the neighborhood. Broadway, Genesee, and the rest of those artery streets of our city have diminished because we don't have the same housing stock. We don't have neighbors that actually support those business districts. So I don't care if you put the cars on artery streets, if they're not interested in shopping in those areas, it's not gonna make any difference. It's actually community and residents that keep Elmwood a thriving business district. It's the community members along Hurdle and in North Buffalo that keep Hurdle and Colvin as thriving business districts. So let's not get it twisted that we need to deal with housing, having the current housing stock as well as infill. So that's why I'll say with our sign here and build it a bridge to better,
we're dealing with jobs. There's been a number of training programs that have taken place through EOC. Also, I'll say the independent contractor deals with Frank Daniels, and also MRBS has some training and has done some training. We've actually had some community members that, even though this project of building a bridge to better has been stalled, our community members have been able to get gainful employment. And I'll say Bishop Badger's family member was able to do that. And we don't want to lose sight of that, that even though the project is stalled, we still want our community members to go for training. There's a lot of construction that's happening in Buffalo with this project, the Bill Stadium, and there's millions of other, and I'll say millions is an exaggeration, but a number of other projects in the city of Buffalo that have construction going on that people can get a prevailing wage job to do better. So I want us to tell nephews, nieces, and people who aren't employed that there are opportunities. The other thing that was neat about this project is we looked at the zip codes that are adjacent to the 33, that they would have preferential treatment and getting employment. We don't want to lose sight of that. You know, we've so when you talk about systemic racism, which we know brought this project into being, and even with the unions, a lot of people of color have been, you know, kept out of those opportunities. But there's a great opportunity now to turn that around. So we need to be rallying together to do that. Housing, there, I'll say Assembly or Senator Sean Ryan has a block by block grant. I'll say Rock is working with community members on bringing in infill housing and also working on dollars to restore current property values. There was a VREP program that if you lived downstairs, if you had a duplex and you had a vacant unit, there was $50,000 to $75,000 to restore that. There's another round coming out because they see that there is a need for the housing stock to be improved upon. So I'll say all the elected officials and us as community members are advocating to restore our community, because it's more than just a land bridge. And that's why we need to not waste time rehashing things that may not be beneficial to our community, but rallying together to do things that will actually uplift a community that has been disregarded and I'll just say set aside, where property values can actually improve and people can learn that they can get a home equity line of credit and start a business or to do something else. So there's wonderful opportunities for people to get into entrepreneurship, to get wonderful jobs, and we do things that will help to build our community up. So I don't want us to lose sight of that. So that is still something that we are working on and advocating for. And want to get that message out that even though we're not moving on this project, we were supposed to start in October, we're not doing that now, but there are still opportunities for people to be engaged and to be actively employed or to start a business. And I'll say also for construction companies and other businesses that do exist, if you're not an MWB currently, which is a minority or woman-owned business enterprise, you can still get that designation. And when we're talking about federal dollars, we're not dealing with MWB egos, but we're dealing with DBE egos, which is disadvantaged business enterprises. There are other things that we can be doing as a community to make sure that we are ready for when construction does happen. So I just wanted to share that those are things that we're working on, and we invite you to help us to work on that and to uplift our community. When it comes to housing, I'm going to give the mic over to Bishop Badger to just share a little bit more on that aspect. Thank you.
You know, just real quick, I think whenever someone, and in my former life I was finance manager many, many years ago. But I think when anyone buys property, you buy it with the understanding that that property will appreciate. The unfortunate thing in our community, because of that 33, and you always have to follow the money at the end of the day, right? So our community was divested in and moved out to the suburbs while people bought homes that depreciated. That's almost unheard of, but it happened in our community. Now the opportunity, and let me just give you this real example real quick. I own a couple homes, one on Donaldson, one on Brunswick. Redid those homes the last 2 or 3 years and made well over $250,000. Whenever you buy a home, you buy it with the understanding, hopefully, that that home will provide not just a place to live, but hopefully for your children to go to college or to start a business. That has not been something that has been available to our community for 60 years or ever, right? So now we have the opportunity for that to happen. So I think it's important to understand that from the homeowners that are in that area, your property value will go up. Somebody said, yeah, but my taxes are gonna go up also. And they already have, because the value of your property has gone up. And the value of your property will go up again. Here's the thing that I think has to happen. There has to be advocacy to the state and to the city to put a moratorium on a community that's been injured, so that for the time that you own that home and you don't sell it, that the property, the taxes don't go up. And as long as it remains in your family, it doesn't go up, right? If you sell it at that point, whoever buys it, then that property value will go up. And so when we talk about restitution, when we talk about these type of things, this is one of the ways that can happen. It's not a pipe dream, it's real. It's happening right now. Just imagine with that parkway, what the value of property is going to be. Is going to skyrocket. The thing that you want to make sure of is that when that happens, that we also advocate that the taxes of the people that have been there, that have been injured, do not continue to be injured. And so I just want to say that, you know, when you buy property, at least when I buy property, I expect to make a profit eventually. And I think that that's probably what everyone that's here that owns a home in that Humble or in the vicinity also is looking forward to appreciation to your property. For the first time in our lifetime, we're gonna have that.
I wanna add a really quick real life example of what's happening in Syracuse, New York right now to that point. And so we are in our fourth year of construction on our highway project. And we are actually in the phase now where we're in the impacted community. Next summer, 2026, we will have a redeveloped neighborhood. One of the major concerns was, one, property values are gonna skyrocket, and they already have. We've already seen investors into the neighborhood buying up homes that are dilapidated. We're seeing investors buying up homes that are boarded up. We're seeing investors buying up empty property, brownfields. We're already seeing it. Our city commerce has already hired a full-time Southside economic development planner. So we know they have big plans for that area. So what we did in our advocacy was we approached the city and said, we need you to bake in protections in your zoning plans to make sure residents who currently live there and tenants who currently rent there are protected. So what we are working on, and we're very close to getting to the finish line, is we're grandfathering property taxes in. So if you are on a low income or limited income, let's say you're retired, you're on a fixed income salary, your taxes will be grandfathered in for as long as you or your descendants own that home. What we're also doing is requiring rent caps in that very specific footprint, which is 500 feet away from the community development. If you're in that 500 zone, your rent is capped. And then there's gonna be some available land as a result of the project. We were successful at advocating that 11%, we tried to get 25, but we got 11. 11% of all new developments have to be affordable housing as defined by HUD. So we did a lot of displacement measures to make sure that folks were not being displaced during the process, and homeowners who are fixed income can't afford to see their taxes go up threefold as a result of new development. So there's so much opportunity to kind of restore your neighborhood and restore that equity back into your home, because they're gonna get equity twofold, threefold, and their property taxes are gonna remain the same. So, I mean, there's a lot of opportunity here.
And I just want to make the community aware that that has been a part of our table conversation while Mr. Ross was living, while Clark Eaton was living, while Stephanie Barber Jeter was living. And also our majority member, Crystal People-Stokes, is aware of that. And we need to, I'll just say, be more proactive to actually write that legislation, because I'll say, I'll put on my clean ear hat, that it's community members that write that. We don't need the legislators to write that, so that the bill actually says what we want and then we present. And if we've got to go to Albany to do that, I'll be looking for you guys to join me on the bus for us to make those trips. But that's all part of us restoring our community and actually bringing about justice and reparations to a community that has been harmed. And we're serious about that, but that's where we need to join our voices together to make sure that we do restore our community and we do help bring some economic, and I'll say generational wealth to the Black community. I'll say the community as a whole, but I'm going to be very specific to say the Black community, because the Black African American community has been harmed. When we think about it, was predominantly white along Humboldt, and they sold their homes to Black individuals who were unaware that a highway was coming. That is very in the forefront of our mind. And I'm also going to say, when it comes to the Olmsted Park Conservancy, they were doing a 21st century plan that was supposed to deal with the entire 33, and as they kept doing their plans, they went from going all the way downtown to Main Street. Main Street went to Parkside, and they were just dealing with from Delaware Park to Parkside, which is why ROC actually formed and organized as a 501c3, because people have dismissed us. We will not be dismissed anymore, and we will continue to advocate and to rally our community together to bring about justice for our community members that have been harmed.
Thank you. Luna, could you just answer one more question here? Part of what we want to make sure that we're able to do is learn from communities who've been through something similar, so that, you know, we don't got to reinvent the wheel. I mean, in a lot of ways, Syracuse has gone ahead and had experiences about where we at right now. So as we plan for meetings going forward, based on what you've seen happening in Syracuse, what are the things we should be doing now to make sure, you know, that our voice is heard, to make sure that our interests are taken care of based on lessons you learned from Syracuse? Meaning that if you could do it all over again, what would you be doing at this point that you didn't know last time that we can benefit from because of that you've been through it already?
Okay, so I want to just caveat, I've been working on that project for 8 years, so it's a long time coming. But I think where we see the most traction is when we had what we called a big table. And what we did is we created an ID1 cooperative table where anyone that was invested in ID1 was at that table, and we met biweekly. And that means we had city legislators at the table, we had state legislators at the table, community activists, community advocates, our developers, our community organizations, and in our jobs folks, all at one table having conversations, giving updates. So I think that would be one thing. I think this is gonna be a little controversial because it was very similar in Syracuse where there was a set of people who wanted a tunnel, and there was a set of people who wanted what we have now with the community grid. And so we decided to start meeting on opposite sides of the table and say, well, what do we actually have that's aligned? And there were some people that had ill intentions that didn't really want a tunnel, they just wanted to stop the project. So when we realized you don't really actually want a resolution, then you're out the group. It's just that simple. Because we couldn't continue to spin our wheels, or for folks who actually didn't want to see a project move forward. So I think it's just figuring out how do you organize people and what are the things you have in common and how to move that forward. I don't know, it was a long, hard fight.
I think the one thing that everybody in this room can agree upon is that we want safety. We want to make sure that environmentally, that whatever happens is safe for the community. I think everybody can agree on that. I think after that, that's where we have to come to the table. But I think the one thing that is unacceptable is to do nothing. That's unacceptable, is to do nothing.
And I'll give one more example about the jobs piece, because that was a big part of our campaign. So we had three major goals: environmental justice, racial justice, and economic justice. Our environmental justice piece was like stop the pollution, stop the harm, and improve the quality and health of our neighborhoods. Like that was like repair the health of our neighborhood. Our racial justice was, how are we going to make sure the people who carried the burden of the original project and the original harm reap the benefits? Like, how are we going to make sure they're reaping the benefits of this project? And then our economic justice was, how are we going to make sure people who live in this footprint, who have been burdened by this footprint, get jobs on this project? And so what I'll tell you is, I'll give you the jobs example because it's the most clear and probably non-controversial. We were told by every union in our region that there weren't enough black people to fill a 15% quota. We were told that, right? We can't have a 15% quota, we'll never reach it, and we'll be punished as union organizers. We'll be punished because we can't meet the quota that you guys are advocating for. So what we did is we filed a Freedom of Information Act to every union to figure out what the percentage of black workers were, and then we foiled how many black people they had on their last job for the past 10 years. And then we looked into the public available data to see how many black people and people who lived in low income areas were unemployed, right? So when we came back with those figures, we said, actually, if we create a training program, we can actually train these folks to do these jobs. So then what was the next step? The next step was to go to, we went to EOC, BOCES, and one other training program that we have locally and said, here are the, and we worked with DOT, here are the jobs we think they're going to need as a result of this project. How do we train them to get them ready for this project? So that was step one. So that took a few years, so we got that down. The second step was, we still got to get the unions to the table. Who has enough capital to force the unions to come to the table? Because they don't have to come to the table. We got one union to come to the table. It was the plumbers union, the first union. Once we had one, and then we started the trickle effect, right? So then people started coming in. So then we said, okay, how do we make sure that we're just not training folks to get certificates and then go out there in the world and still have no job? Like, how do we force them, the union folks, to hire them? Oh, we know, we'll make the union people their teachers. So we'll pay union staff to be faculty for these training programs, and at the end of that training program, they get an automatic interview. So we did that, and then we found there were problems along the way. Now this is, we're 4 or 5 years before the project was even set to start, right? We're planning, we're prepping. And then we found, oh, people can't get their license because they owe child support or they have a criminal conviction. Okay, what legal service center around Syracuse is willing to put some work up, and we'll write the grants to get them the funding? So we were able to write a grant and get part-time funding for a staff member, an attorney, to go into every training program and fix your license problems. Okay, what other barrier do you have? It was really like a game of whack-a-mole. And so now, today, as the project is 3 years in, we have ranged from 16% to 25% local hire initiative. We've not only met that goal, every single contract has exceeded that goal. And that's because we had the city, the state, the unions, and the community all working together to make sure that people got jobs. People have went from living in poverty to living middle class in 2-3 years. And we speak to them. We talk to them all. We go to the training programs. We check in on them. They still call us if things don't go right. I got suspended today. Why? What happened? Right? So we still work with them. And it's just beautiful to see people reach themselves out of poverty. And so that's just a real life example. And we, at some point, we did connect NYSDOT, this regional office, with the NYSDOT in Syracuse, and said, you should figure out how we did it so we don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Real quick, just, and our project hasn't started yet. My nephew called me, this was last year, Rich, when we had the meeting here. He had just got out of jail 2 days ago. He was a community pharmaceutical salesman. And he had just got out of jail. And he said, Unc, I need a job. And I said, come to this meeting tonight. And he came. And Rich, we had to sign up where people could go to the EOC, right. He was on my program a couple months ago. He finished the program, graduated, had a cap and gown on. He's working, he worked at the stadium. He said, Unc, I get calls every week for someone wanting to hire me. He, at the time that we talked, he had two other job offers that were paying more than what he was getting right now, and his present employer was going to pay for him to go to school for heavy equipment operator. So the project hasn't even started yet, and he got points because he had a record. So we're not talking pipe dreams here. We're talking about real life situations where people, I should have brought him here tonight, but
Just on that point, folks, I want to thank members at the table here. They were part of our meetings that we had, the stakeholder meetings. There was a lot of support for that local hire, a lot of support for training, and through DOT and the EOC working together with Crystal People's Stokes Office, we're able to have those programs in place today. So that was a promise made and a promise.
Out here, we feel things. The sore calves that lead to epic views, the cool waterfall mist during a hot hike, and the breeze that hits just right at the summit. But hey, don't just listen to us. Experience it for yourself. All Trails makes it easy to discover the best of the outdoors. With more than 450,000 trails around the world, points of interest along the trail, and offline maps for always-on navigation. Download the free app today and find your next outdoor adventure.
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky, but Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 50% off with minimum purchase, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
I found long ago that that's an exercise for my arms. I wanted to roll back the conversation for a minute because the reality is that we have a portion still of people like me who inherited properties. And let's be realistic, we are still living in red line neighborhoods. You still pay more for your car insurance, you still pay more for your house insurance, you still pay more just because of your zip code. There was a cap that happened a little while ago where there were a small amount of families that were grandfathered in because of the taxes. Now I'm saying all of this because obviously in some communities like mine in the Fruit Belt where we are an aging population, now I'm a senior. These people have paid their taxes and they have taken care of their communities all of this time. And they have received nothing in terms of, you know, assistance from the city, from the government, whatever. They need to be looked at in that same respect, that there has to be something that's implemented where they don't have to continue to see their taxes raised up, and what are they going to continue to do? They don't want to lose their homes. You've got people that are living in the same house that they were born in. We have to make sure that there is something in place that protects them as well. We're not in Humboldt, but we're off Humboldt, and we're still the fruit belt, and we still have other communities that are just like ours that have inherited these properties, and we're taking care of them, and we're doing what we're supposed to do. But we need some help too. Thank you.
To Ms. Barr's point, Majority Leader Peoples-Stokes did pass legislation for the Fruit Belt for a property tax cap. It is something that we're looking at replicating for this project. It would not only be for Humboldt. You know, we have to designate like a boundary in terms of like by street, in terms of what would be included. It's ongoing. We do not have a draft available yet, but it is something that we are currently working on. We have already been successful, as she indicated, in the Fruit Belt, and it's something that we're planning on doing again.
Oh, yes. I want to just quickly state that I'm glad we had this meeting. I'm hearing that, you know, as a past experience from the old days, we had our people voting for the last 25 years. Our people in our neighborhoods have not voted, not even 20%. That is a statistic, and we can look at it and analyze it and state the problem. It's not these boogeymen. The problem is us. You know, whether we allow our people who don't know about these meetings, cannot come to these meetings, live on our streets, our young single mothers who's raised the children all alone, they receive nothing from the political and social, and I'm not talking about the others. So our people are, I've seen it where we broke voted when I was coming with Eve and the block clubs. We had, everybody had block clubs. There's no block clubs anymore. Not active like they should be. So what I'm saying is that the fact that our people have not been able to vote and our elected officials in no fault of their own, they have been receiving the offices, and somebody has been influencing them, but it hasn't been all the time our people. And that's the reality we have to accept. So, we're talking about this going to be a big boondoggle for us. It ain't going to, you know, the contractors and the developers are going to do what contractors and developers do. But they've been doing it. They're going to continue to pitch. And that's all I want to say. We got to look at ourselves, the fact that our people are not voting. The less our people vote, the stronger they come down with these high-polluting goals. And after we get to the people, there ain't gonna be nothing. It's gonna be a big, like it's been, like drunk juice, school construction. And go on.
So thank you so much, Brother Elder. Appreciate your comments. So we're gonna end this meeting like we started the meeting. We talked about what Buffalo is gonna look like 10 years from now. We asked the question whether it was going to be better, whether it's going to be the same, or whether it's going to be worse. And we talked about if we did nothing, if you leave anything unattended, it's just going to deteriorate. It's going to get worse. If you do the same thing, you're going to get the same result. You do what you always did, what you get, what you always got. In order for it to be better, you have to have a vision of better. You have to have a plan of better. You have to get up every day. You have to work on making it better. Our commitment is to make Buffalo better. So to get some of the results that Lanessa talked about in Syracuse, part of it is we got to learn from people who've gone before us. If contractors do what contractors do, and that's what they did, if we want to get a different result, we got to do something differently. And it sounds like from the statistics that Lanessa gave, they got a different result in Syracuse. So our commitment is to meet every month, you know what I'm saying? So we have another meeting coming up August 21st to continue to stay together, to talk about the work that we have to do to make sure this project makes our community better. So we don't have to have excuses about why things didn't go the way we wanted them to go, because we were at the table doing the work to make them go the way we wanted to go. We also have upcoming, the DOT is gonna start doing this community outreach. So there are two things we're doing immediately going forward. We're gonna participate with the DOT in their community outreach. And then we're also gonna reach out to the commissioner because we wanna know the details of the EIS. We wanna know what that EME, and I've heard that consensus here. We will go back to the commissioner and talk to the commissioner saying, the judge has ruled there have to be an EIS. We wanna know the timeline for the EIS, we wanna know what's in it. And that's kind of what we're looking to hopefully do between now and our August meeting and see if we can get some information from the commissioner. So we will be our 5 minutes from, do you wanna say anything in closing, Sydney?
I just wanna thank everyone. I appreciate everyone's comments. And I'll just say to our elder gentleman, my brother here to my left, what will prevent us from having a repeat of the joint school board project is us uniting our voices. I will say, as we went through the job training aspect, we had to give the DOT some pushback that, 3% or not dealing with our zip code was not acceptable to us. So this is not an end-all be-all. And I'll say, even with finding out about DBEs, we need to know that sooner. So I see the EIS as a blessing for us as a community to be more prepared. I'm gonna give everybody some homework. There's people who aren't in this room today that probably should be here. If you're gonna join us on August 21st, invite those community members. And the one thing I do ask is that we share the truth of information. Information you've got here today, don't twist it into something that it's not. Let's share the truth with our community members so that everybody can have the facts to make an educated decision on how we move our community forward. And that's not been happening. And we will address those things. But I'll say in church, I'm part of a Vacation Bible School. I teach Sunday school. We say each one teach one, each one reach one. I challenge every community member here today to reach someone, to share what you learned today that might have clarified something that you weren't clear on before, and spread the truth to our community members, but then show up, and when you come back, and I think we might be here, we'll talk to Pastor Gillison, so we do appreciate him hosting the jobs, community meeting when we were starting the job training. We appreciate him hosting it here. This might be a good central location. We'll have that conversation. But if you didn't sign up, please make sure you signed up because we will be reaching out to you. Look for the criterion, the challenger as far as our monthly meetings, but we will be meeting monthly. If you're interested in something in particular, whether it's community, jobs, housing, or something, you have something that's your niche, because we all don't need to do the same thing, we will have meetings for people to focus on different things. So we'll be meeting weekly, but not weekly as a whole group. We'll be focused on some things. But I encourage everyone to invite someone to come and share this information so that more of our community members will be a part of it. And I will close with this. Rock was very intentional as far as involving and inviting our community members to be a part of us. Most people dismissed us because they didn't think we'd ever get to this point. Once we actually got to this point, we have the funding, now voices and things, I didn't hear about this, even though if you look at the newspapers and other things, there's information of how we've had rallies and we've done canvassing, and we're not gonna stop, we're gonna continue, but let's not use the excuse that I didn't know, because each one of us can tell someone about the next meeting or what we learned today and invite them to be a part of building and uplifting our community. Thank you.
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky. But Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 50% off with minimum purchase, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Bitcoin might sound complicated, but the Gemini credit card makes it so simple. Use it like any credit card, buy lunch, gas, or your weekly groceries, and you'll earn up to 4% back instantly in Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos straight to your account. No annual fee. And right now, you can grab a $200 Bitcoin intro bonus. It's the easiest way to start building your Bitcoin stash. Go to Gemini.com/card to learn more. Terms apply. Issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must be approved by June 30th, 2025 and spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other Gemini credit card terms, see rates and fees.